our country being managed too much by polling? I'm Thomas Wright on the right.
In political life, where has all the vision gone? Replaced by polls. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Does coal have a future in Utah? I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center, and I am joined on the political left by State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, Natalie. Go Utes!
And on the right by the former chair of the Republican Party, Thomas Wright.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thomas, always great to have you in the studio while Mr. Hughes is gallivanting around. Where is he?
I think he's up trying.
Tailgating.
Tailgating. There we go.
I think he's up trying to save Mount McKinley.
If Greg is tailgating, it wouldn't be for the University of Utah, which tonight hosts Michigan. When does that happen, Jim?
That happens tonight.
There's a lot of tempted people out there to unload those tickets, but you know, how many do you think actually will?
It would be big. I'm putting up the U sign in the studio here, but we better talk about some political events as well. How about let's talk for just a minute about Donald Trump in the Utah policy poll trumping Hillary in Utah?
Well, that's the way you look at it, Natalie. I look at it like he only beat her by 7 points. And if Donald Trump is the candidate, Utah will be competitive for the first time since 1964 when Lyndon Johnson won. So I say bring him on. And we did our own poll just to see how accurate this was. So we had Hillary Clinton against newly announced GOP candidate Lucifer, and Hillary won. So it is not as though a Democrat can't beat a Republican in Utah.
Thomas, why do you think Trump is resonating with Utah voters?
I'm not sure he's resonating, but I guess when he's put up against Hillary Clinton, there's a little resonating going on. I saw a poll where Trump wasn't doing all that well, but I think Trump, while it's troubling for some to see him say some of the things he says and have some of the tactics that he has, mm-hmm. it's refreshing to not see a professional career politician and somebody who's willing to stand up and speak, just really shoot from the hip. And that hasn't played well in a lot of instances, and I haven't been a fan of a lot of things that he said. But yeah. it is a little bit refreshing for some people to see that there is hope for somebody who hasn't spent their entire life aspiring to higher office.
Yeah, I saw a news report this week about someone asking Trump about his favorite Bible verse.
Oh, yeah.
And he really struggled. And the Twitter sphere just lit up with all these things about Trump and the Bible. Did you see any of that, Jim?
Look, I just love it. And I can't wait until somebody asks, so, Donald, what do you think of Mormons? Because who knows what's going to come out of there? I mean, it's just eager anticipation of what's going to be next.
They started describing how Trump would, say a Bible verse, and they talked about Noah, and he goes, like, there's this really bad guy, and, you know, he did really bad things, and just, you know, he's just so over the top.
There's a Twitter feed out there you can follow with, what Bible verses would be if Trump said them, and I encourage everyone to get out there and follow him. Maybe I'll try to find it.
Excellent.
It's pretty hilarious.
We also had Rand Paul visiting Utah over the weekend. Thomas, did you go to any of that? Or
I didn't make it there,
or?
But I had a lot of people that friends there, and I talked to people who were there yesterday and earlier in the week. There was a lot of people there, and the age was a lot younger, which is what you see with Rand Paul around the country. And Rand, I think it's great that he came to Utah. I think it's great that he's energizing his supporters and the Republican base. He has a lot of great ideas, and he represents an element of our party that's necessary for us to win.
Yeah. My daughter lives in Boston with her husband, so they're in the younger set. They tend to talk about Rand Paulette a bit, and then they also talk about Bernie Sanders. I think it's so funny because they're drawn to both candidates, even though they're just completely different.
Right.
But there's this young set that likes the freedom and liberty of the libertarian kind of ideals, and then they also have very strong feelings about certain social issues that Bernie Sanders, brings out for him.
Yeah, two very different candidates.
Very different.
Yeah, talking about, libertarian principles. And a lot of those principles would serve our country really well. And so it's important to pay attention.
Jim, you have any reaction to the Rand Paul visit to Utah?
You know, what's interesting so far, and it can change, is exactly what you said, Natalie, about your daughter. You look at the polls, the establishment, or people that are perceived as the establishment, just aren't they're not hitting it. Mm-hmm. Hillary is declining. You see Jeb and the rest of those senators, even Senator Paul, on the outs. And you see these complete outsiders mm-hmm. like Sanders and like Trump and like Ben Carson. People have that kind of spirit of 1980, and I suspect like 2008. This may not end. We may mm-hmm. end up with some shocking changes as America just wants to see something different. And I feel comfortable that it's not going to be a Bush versus Clinton. That the American voters just don't want to go that way.
Yeah, you mentioned in one of our earlier programs that you thought that this could affect Herbert because he's the establishment candidate. So could Jonathan Johnson have a rise that isn't predicted? Or is there someone else out there waiting in the wings, whether it be in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party?
That's a great question. I do agree with Jim. It could be a 1980 or a 2008. You look at the Republican presidential candidates, the top four right now in Iowa are not politicians.
Yeah.
You know, of the however many are running on the Republican side now, 16,
17. I know it's Carson, Trump, Fiorina, and who else?
Yeah.
Fiorina.
Oh, you caught me off guard.
But there is a fourth.
Right.
Yeah.
And the point there is what Jim's saying. There's this distrust with our government and the American political system. And the day of the career politician in this cycle is going to be short-lived. I mean, people just don't want the person who's been prepping themselves for the last 30 years to say the right things to try to become, the elected official. So it will be a very interesting cycle and very interesting to watch.
As you look at this in a state basis, this is the kind of year somebody could come completely out of the blue, somebody particularly who can self-fund and can put that all together. If I were Gary Herbert, I would be – I'm not trying to be political on this. I'm just saying you'd still vote for Herbert or you'd still bet on Herbert. But the circumstances are right that this is the kind of year that a sitting guy like Gary Herbert could get swept up in a tidal wave and be gone.
And the one thing nobody's talking about for 2016 in Utah is the changes made by SB 54.
Mm. Where, count my vote.
Yeah, count my vote, where plurality now is a major factor in Utah elections. Mm-hmm. And plurality meaning that there is no runoff in the primary election. So if you have four people run, somebody can win with 27% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And so for an incumbent like Gary Herbert, if a bunch of people jump in the race and, you know, he gets 25%, somebody can get 27% and become the nominee. And it's the greatest flaw with the compromise of SB 54. And I know the legislators are talking about it, but there really is no good solution for it. So it will be interesting to see if we ended up with a scenario based on plurality.
Well, Herbert appears to have been busy doing some things to kind of position himself well. He's got this 12-step plan to improve the Division of Alcohol and Beverage Control, Jim. We got a 12-step plan.
Look, you know, it's over. We need a governor. We need a legislature to lead into the next century. And you know what? You go back to the very day that we created a DABC. It is the most scandal-ridden agency we've ever had. It is mismanaged on an epic proportion. Its governance system with these part-time people who may even be interested and committed and are doesn't work. It is a $350 million a year business that if it was your business or my business, we would pull our hair out, we would fire everybody, and we would do what needs to be done. It needs to be privatized, and it needs to be privatized now. And we need to get the government out of this mess. Its economic model, its business model, is Soviet 1982. And you know what? That doesn't work. It's time. We need to have that discussion and figure out how to discourage alcohol consumption but privatize the business.
Thomas, apparently he has strong feelings on that one.
I love it. He's talking about privatizing and smaller government. It's working, Jim. All this influence on you from my he's right. Government's big. It's bloated. It's inefficient. There's so many ways to improve government and get it out of so many different things that it should not be involved in the first place. The government is a terrible partner. They don't know how to operate business. You just look across the board, whether it's our state government in certain arenas mm-hmm. or our federal government. So privatize
well
a
said.
Lot of things. Let's do it.
Well said, Thomas. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Thomas Wright and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Thomas Wright on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the productive middle, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to talk for a little bit about the proliferation of polls in politics. And you guys are people who consume polls, poll watchers. You're quoting polls all the time. It seems to me, Thomas, that every time I turn around, there is a new poll in Utah.
Oh, it's every day. It's everything you can think of. I'm not sure how good it is. I have a feeling that it's not as good as it should be. Mm-hmm. But I get the feeling that sometimes in our state, we want to lead based on or encourage people to lead based on public opinion. And I think that's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. Public opinion plays a role in our process for sure. But we need to elect people that are leaders, that really deeply understand these issues, that are willing to say, hey, you know what? We need to make a change here. And I'm going to make it happen and move public opinion, not manage the status quo. And it just feels like we're daring our elected officials to be cautious.
Yeah.
It's we're not going to get anywhere.
It reminds me of the Steve Jobs biography, Walter Isaacson, where there's that critical point in the biography where Jobs' staff wants to poll people about what consumers want. And Jobs says, I don't want to give them what they want. I want to give them what they need. You know, I want to give them what I think.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's leadership.
And that's what you're saying is being cut out.
I think there's a difference between management and leadership. If you want to manage people's expectations and manage public opinion and manage your approval ratings and manage your way into, you know, to a situation, you can do it. But I know in my business sometimes I have to lead.
Yeah.
I have to make tough decisions based on what I know and then deal with it afterwards. And we need to find people who are comfortable doing that, that don't look at the public opinion polls on every single decision the state has to make.
Jim, are you tired of polls?
The soul has been taken out of leading in the public sphere. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in Chicago at the Obama headquarters in 2012. When did he? 2012. Mm-hmm. And it was football fields of 20-somethings with laptops just pounding on it. Who knows doing what? And they were showing us around, you know, bringing the old guys around to show how good they were doing. So the guy that was running the Obama campaign, he had 5 minutes. They dragged him out of an office, and somebody asked him a question. And the question was, I can't remember what it was, how many doors were knocked on? He went to his laptop or to a handheld thing and then punched in some numbers and said, today we've knocked on 12,384 doors. And that's the way they thought. Everything they did was metrics oriented, was poll oriented, was numbers, 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 numbers. And a whole generation, Romney people, because they got their butt beat and thought they were going to win that last night in the hotel, recognized there's a whole new world out here that we better catch up with, as well as this whole young generation of OFA people. They are soulless. You can sit with them and they're good people, but they're like zombies. You better have some numbers and you better have this and you better have that. And if you have passion or you care about an issue, unless it ranks third in their blah, blah, blah numbers, it's not on the list. I think this has brought about the dumbing down of leadership in America. And it's time. I think the Becker campaign, to a certain extent, has fallen into this. They've got a large group of these really smart, metrics-oriented people, but you know what? They don't have soul.
Yeah.
And so it's the loss. It's been a tremendous loss because when these people get elected, they're there asking the guy with the numbers, blah, 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 blah. You know what? Throw it out. Get a heart. Look at numbers, but just make that a part of where you're going if you want to be a political leader.
So, Thomas, here's a polling question. What do you think would have happened if the LDS Church would have polled about whether they should stay in the scouting program?
Didn't they? I saw a lot of polling like that. These polls in Utah, some of them, I hear around that the polling is nothing more than just blasting out emails mm-hmm. to a variety of people and then seeing who responds mm-hmm. and getting 300 respondents from an email that maybe goes to 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's polling.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we look at polling and we see the margin of error, but isn't there a lot of other factors that go into good quality polling?
Measurement error. Just measurement survey error. Design.
Right. And I just worry, one, that I agree with Jim, we're killing leadership when all we want to do is manage public opinion, but also if the polling is wrong and it's not accurate, then we're leading not only by polls, but polls that aren't right.
Right.
Which
right.
is kind of a double whammy.
I learned a long time ago on Capitol Hill that polling wasn't a very persuasive argument with legislators. They just want to do what they want to do. But Thomas didn't take my bite about the LDS Church and polling and the...
there was a poll.
And the scouting program.
And the poll said, Utahns want you to dump to the LDS Church. They want you to dump Boy Scouting. I think wiser heads prevailed, and the LDS Church decided to stay in. And there you have leadership. You know, they have a base, too, let's face it. And, you know, I'm sure that in some degree they look and they want to know what their people are thinking as they make decisions. It was a good decision. Look, as a Democratic Party chair, we had two kind of polls. We had a poll that we really wanted to know what was going on, and then we had a poll that we wanted to release to say XYZ is happening, everybody jump on board. And when I see a lot of polls, the newspapers these days can't afford any polls at all that they pay for the way they did in the old days. Mm-hmm. They come from special interests. Utah Policy also has a component of their company that is a lobbying group. Mm-hmm. And they put out these polls, and the media picks up on them like, you know, this is real and official, and it is a real poll company. But just be careful, because things can be manipulated by the person who's putting the poll out. You ask questions a certain way and you get back a certain answer. The public doesn't understand that. The media just says, oh, my goodness, this would have cost us 20 grand. We got access to a poll. It's by a reputable company. We're putting it out. When a lot of times there is a hidden agenda or hidden meaning or a paid sponsor somewhere that is manipulating you as you read polls, even in the legitimate media.
Fascinating. Okay, I don't know how to jump from polling to coal in Utah, but production's down 25%. We have a whole industry in our state that is shriveling up and basically going away. It's a geographic issue because it's very much, you know, centralized in the Price kind of region of our state, Carbon County, if you will. I don't know. Thomas, do you worry about this? Do you think there's a future for coal in Utah?
I think there is a future, and anytime you see something shift that dramatically, there should be concern, and we should look into it and find out why and understand it. It's a big part of our state's economy. Mm-hmm. I think 80% of the electricity in Utah is generated from coal, and a lot of people don't know that, but, you know, every time
we like our electricity.
Every time I drive down the street, I see a car, electrical car plugged in, I think, well, that's great here, but that somewhere down the road, we're burning coal to make that car go. So understanding where our energy comes from, understanding the history of our energy in Utah is important. It's an important part of our economy. And, you know, of course, a lot of people don't want to burn coal, and you know, that's important. But anytime you see something jump like that or move like that, you have to find out why, and you have to make sure that there isn't long-term unintended consequences.
Yeah. Jim, our largest power plant, the IPP plant down in Delta, I mean, the plans call for it to be recommissioned into a natural gas plant in our lifetime.
And the reason for that is because they sell much of that power to California.
That's
and
right.
California said, we're not taking any more coal. Listen, state leaders, listen, Carbon County and Emery County. There is no future in coal. Like it or not, fair or not, it's your economy or not, you can't prop up buggy whips. So instead of focusing on saving the unsavable, we ought to be investing in those. There's less than 2,000 full-time jobs for coal miners in Utah. We ought to be retraining. We ought to be opening up those counties to alternatives. Instead, we're going completely the opposite direction. The CIB board just approved $53 million to build a port in Oakland, which will give the right for the state of Utah to export Utah coal for the next 30 years to Asia. Give me a break. We could use that $53 million in Carbon County. They're also talking about a $100 million spur to go from a wilderness area to connect to a coal mine to the Union Pacific to get coal out, cost to Utahns $100 million. There's $153 million that we ought to be spending preparing for the future. Instead, we're grasping to hang on to the past. We need to face the reality that coal is not in Utah's future.
Any rebuttal to that, Thomas?
Well, even President Obama's talked about clean coal utilization, and there are ways to retrofit plants to utilize coal in a more clean and more efficient way. I think sales revenue in the state of Utah, off the top of my head, I think it's $600 million a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the royalties and the tax revenues and the job you know, dependency is on that, but I know it's huge because I've been in rural Utah many times.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be careful about how we move forward, make sure we do it in a thoughtful way. Everybody in Utah wants the environment to be clean. Everybody wants to, you know, produce electricity in a responsible way. Mm-hmm. But we got to make sure that it's not damaging our economy, which then hurts our schools, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. So let's do it in a responsible way that's well thought out.
Yeah, and I sometimes worry about, you know, everyone rushes away from coal, but then before you know it, you have a problem with one of the other energy sources, either in supply or spiking prices or whatever. So some balance can be nice.
Absolutely,
that
yeah.
sounds like someone coming from the political center, doesn't it? Hey, let's talk about some other issues just because it's interesting. Springdale, one of my favorite cities in Utah. It's the Gateway Designs National Park. It has so much character. They've preserved something really special there, something that I think Moab missed out on. But they've now passed an ordinance that repeals the ban on chain restaurants in Springdale. Yikes. Thomas, what do you see coming there? Jim, what do you see?
Wow, I don't know what to say. Jim, I'm going to have to defer to you on this one.
I say, can't we have some soul somewhere? Can a community say...
The theme of this program is soul.
That wasn't really on my radar.
Let there be subways everywhere else in the world in our little entrance to this most beautiful jewel, to one of the great jewels on the planet. It's not going to look like 33rd South in West Valley or State Street in Orem. I mean, or State Street in Salt Lake. Is it too much to ask to preserve just certain areas and say, you know what? Yeah, we understand you don't get all the property rights you want and that are divinely in the Constitution somewhere that I haven't read. But nonetheless, we as a community, this is what we've decided and we live here and that's where we're going.
You drive into Park City, you know this well, Thomas, but you know you have the beautiful Osgathorpe Barn that just is sitting there and all the conservation easements that preserved that. You know, they've preserved things in Springdale, but this is a little threatening.
It is. And I think the point here is that government closest to the people is going to always make the best decision, right? And people of Park City have done a fantastic job in preserving Park City. Mm-hmm. And what worked for them there may not have worked for the people on 33rd South, just like it might not work for the people in Springdale. So I think it's important just to look at it and say, hey, let's keep it closest to the people. Let the people who are there, who know the issues the best, make the decisions. We don't need people from Salt Lake City or from Washington, D.C. telling people in rural Utah what they need to do.
You heard it from the right. Let's go to our gripes. There's a lot to gripe about. I've got a list that's about five deep. I'm trying to think which one to do. Jim, what do you want to highlight?
I'll be quick. Last week we talked about the fact that in our state capitol, there is a posh lobbyist room that's been kind of quiet down there. And they tried to throw the American, they threw the American Legion out because they wanted to expand. So last week I did a little research. At least somebody on my staff did. Our lobbyists are paying $21.64 a square foot for that place, which has to be the most ideal office space in the planet for Utah lobbyists in the Utah Capitol. In comparison, the offices in Wells Fargo and Building 222, which are two of the best downtown, $34 to $36 a square foot. So the state is not only giving corporate lobbyists space in the Capitol, they're giving them at a cut rate, and that, my friends, is disgusting. They shouldn't be there at all, but if they are, they ought to be paying the highest kind of rates, not a special rate for lobbyists in the Capitol.
Jim, apparently you're taking on the soul of the Capitol. Oh, Thomas? Man.
Wow. My gripe this week is related to presidential politics. It's a disappointment to me that still only 12 states in this country will decide who our next president of the United States is. And I understand the Electoral College. I've been involved in it. I've been a student of it. I understand why the founding fathers did that. But it just seems to me when so many states are left out of the process that the process will never be as good as it can be and that we're just going to not have a voice. I think it's sad Utah's a flyover state. Look how well we've done in Utah. Mm-hmm. Just look at our economy, our quality of life, the Utah lifestyle. We've done so many things right. And yet none of that will be exposed to this presidential race. And that's sad to me. So my gripe is, only 12 states really deciding who the next president of the United States will be, and one of them will not be Utah.
Yeah, very well said. You know, my list, I have a few things on my list. I was thinking about the rise in e-cigs. That bothers me. I don't like how Jim calls all of his progressive friends, and it doesn't include me, because I think I'm pretty progressive, but your use of progressive, the term, bothers me. I'm really mad at Real. You know, they keep losing, and Javi Morales missed a PK in the last game, all those sorts of things. But I decided I'm going to pick on the people at the farmer's market that are picking out corn. And they sit here and squeeze back a little bit of that the husk to see if it's good before they put it in their bag. And it's just become this industry of all these women sitting here pulling back, kind of cheating.
I'm going now. I got to see this.
Well, and it just sort of, I'm sort of like, these are, this is a farmer's market. What are you paying, 25 cents an ear? And they sit there and basically self-select all the corn. And since I refuse to do it, I get all the ones they throw back. And so right. I get all the corn that has like the, I don't
well,
know.
Well, at least you don't have to take the husk off when you get home.
You got it. Thanks. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We really enjoy that you've been listening. Thomas Wright, Jim DeBacchus, Natalie Gochter. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.